I was reading, and this is what I love about, you know, the whole seeing Jesus as a Jewish man, and, you know, being witnessed to by a Jew, and you see this Jesus as a Jewish man. I was, and I don't know where I read it, but this idea, you know, on the cross where Jesus says, you know, into your hands, Lord, I commend my spirit. And I always thought that was a big grand, big gesture. And then someone said to me that it was a Jewish child's prayer that he would say at night before bed, to say, you know, at night, you know, when they'd say, you know, like you'd say, you know, meet Matthew, Mark, Luke and John, you know, all that, not that I say that, but anyway, but little prayers, you know. No, I don't do that one either. But you know, and I just thought it just completely changed my understanding of that, the possibility of that last moment being much more about Daddy here, you know, into your hands.
Intimacy.
Yeah. And it wasn't this big gesture, it was a child's prayer, and this kind of that he might have learned from his mum's knee or from his family. I just thought, you know, that when you put him in context as a Jewish man, you get this richness of the culture and the you kind of go back in time to the, you know, to it has so much more depth, so much more meaning.
Yeah, it's interesting in the comparison with the previous statement he makes, Eloi, Eloi, lema sabachthani, you know, my God, why have you forsaken me?
Yeah.
But then actually
yeah.
to have an intimate moment with his father, as if maybe the pain has driven him to say the first one, but now he knows it's over, he can actually remember what he's doing it for and what it's all about, and as he loses consciousness, he does, yeah, that's it.
I'm going to sleep. But there's that I can't pronounce it properly. But it's another saying. So for this you have forsaken me.
Mm.
There's a, you know, why have you forsaken me? There's another someone was saying another translation. Right, for this you have forsaken me. Yeah. So not why have you, but for this you've forsaken me. Yeah.
Have you forsaken me? Or is it for this you have forsaken me? Or what?
That'd be interesting.
What's it like? Different.
Well, most of the translations certainly say why.
Right.
But I think, you know, what you're homing in on here is really very fascinating. The reality of the Hebrew context of everything associated with Jesus is critically important. And just looking for a moment at the crucifixion, we know that from 12 noon till 3 in the afternoon, there was darkness. And it's an interesting question to ask, why was that? For whose sake was that? And I think there can, for me, be only one reason, and that's for the people's sake.
Yeah.
In other words, there was something that they couldn't see clearly, and God had done that, because if they had seen it clearly, they'd have died on the spot.
Yeah.
What was it? Jesus became sin, with our sin.
Yeah.
And it was within that context, I just suggest this to you, it was within that context, as he was completely identified, as it were, with the sin of the whole world, that he cries out, my God, why have you forsaken me? Because in that terrible three-hour period, as I think it probably was, he was carrying all that. And of course, God cannot look on sin. And you can think of that hideous experience. But then, when it's over, into your hands I commit my spirit. And it is finished, you know.
They're saying that the pain that he went through there was far worse than the actual physical pain in the crucifixion.
Isaiah 52 and 53, just hideous.
No comparison.
Hideous.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I just suggest that it might have something to do with a timetable.
Mm. I know I've heard another person say that, you know, the 3 hours of darkness was because in that moment sin was being dealt with in its completion. And for any of us to see that would mean we'd have to see all of sin in its entirety and all of God's wrath in its entirety. And so how gracious of God to cover, you know, to bring darkness. So we didn't say the full, you know, the fact that Christ became every sin and every sinful person to, and it not physically changed, but, you know, every sin was put on him, and everything, every kind of abuse, every kind of lie, every kind of thought or lust, all was, you know, every disease, every anything.
Past and future.
Yeah. And along with that, the judgment or the part of God that would deal with that was all there. And so no wonder there was darkness to hide that, because
without that darkness,
it was to an extent
the visible version of it,
wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Couldn't see it
throughout the Bible. So throughout the Old Testament, so many times I had to do so many special things to make sure I didn't see the physical presence of God. So how much more? How much of God's presence to an extent must have? Well, it's weird because on the cross, was it that God's presence was made in its form of judgment, or was it that God's presence was completely taken away? It says the Father's face was turned away. Was it that all of the wrath of God came onto Christ, which is what I believe it was? Yet at the same time, how can God's wrath be there, yet at the same time for his presence not to be there? Does that make sense? I'm making no sense.
How many angels does it take to dance on the pin?
Some questions are a little bit tricky, aren't they?
Does it say the wrath of God? It says the sin of man was on him. Does it say the wrath of man was on Jesus? Wrath of God was on Jesus.
So the wrath of God is like the consequence of the sin.
That the sin, God, Jesus had the sin.
Saffron Planet, making sense of it all.
Saffron.